welcome to the Gregory Neesmith Show, a special delivery of underdog stuff. It's also a special mix of politics, culture, and personal development stuff, too. And as always, to take you on that journey every week, you have your host, Gregory Neesmith. And while I could list a bunch of things that I'm into, I just like to say I'm into spreading special stuff to underdogs. And I'm grateful to do that every week. And one of the places I get to do it is on the Gregory Neesmith Show. And quick disclaimer, just in case this is your first time tuning into the program, I hope it's not, but if it is, quick disclaimer, this ain't CNN, this ain't Fox News, this ain't Hot 97, this ain't MSNBC, this ain't the New York Times. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but they cover the news, they commentate about it, but here at the Gregory Neesmith Show, we get personal about it. So let's get personal about some underdog stuff in society and culture. And enough about me and about the show. Let's talk about you. You can go on this journey, too, for the next 2 hours. A couple ways. One, Mr. Telephone Man. There's nothing wrong with this line. If you dial 212-650-6903, I'm going to pick up every time. And for those of you who like to let your fingers do the walking and the talking, you can do that at Facebook.com/Gregory Neesmith. That's GregoryNeesmith. We got the Facebook Live up and running. And I'll read your comments on the air. And they'll not only make the live radio show, but they'll make the podcast too. Because I know not everybody is free on Sunday afternoon. So we have a podcast that comes out on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays on places like iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and Podomatic and stuff like that. With that, today, what are we going to talk about today? Couple things on my mind. One, black coffee. Black coffee's on my mind. Also on my mind today is villains or vilified. And last but not least, I'd love to end the show talking about it's never too late. Like never. It may feel like it's too late, but it's never too late. And there's an awesome example of that I would love to share at the end of the show. So, yeah, we're going to get into it. Black coffee, villains are vilified, and it's never too late. And I promise it'll all make sense in the next 2 hours or so. And I'm sure you'll help along the way. Well, I got to say, my city's in the news. And not in the way that I want it to be in the news. I mean, I like when my city's in the news like Villanova Wildcats win the NCAA National Basketball Championship. I mean, technically it's not in Philly, but it's close to Philly, so we'll count it. And I like when my city's in the news about things like the Eagles winning the Super Bowl, being the best team in the NFL, although I didn't watch because, you know, I was boycotting the NFL, but I still like to see good things happen in or around my city. But unfortunately, my city's been in the news recently, and it has something to do with black coffee. And with this 1 minute clip I'm about to play, maybe you have heard what I'm talking about.
Black guys sitting here eating me?
Yes, I do.
Well, what did they do? What did they do? Someone told me they did.
They didn't do anything. I saw the entire thing.
They did what?
They did. The woman says,
what happened in the way that incident escalated and the outcome was nothing but reprehensible. And I'm sorry.
Well, now, if you haven't heard, there was some stuff going down at a Starbucks in Philadelphia in the Rittenhouse Town Square area. And I wasn't quite sure where to go about this topic, because it seems like stuff like this happens time and time and time and time again. And I understand, underdogs out there, if you're tired. Tired of being calm. Tired of hearing this is the last time. Tired of being depicted as the villain. Tired of having the code switch all the time. So tired that you might not even want to keep going. But this wouldn't be a show for underdogs if we didn't talk about it. So we're going to. And this whole thing had me thinking about friends and allies and things like that. And I thought about, you ever have a friend where you have mixed feelings about them? You know, they didn't grow up the same way you grew up. You guys may be from different cultures, different backgrounds, different sides of town. But for whatever reason, they end up becoming cool with you. You cool with them. But there's always a bit of a love-hate relationship. Right? It's that friend who's not quite like you, who says stuff like they don't see color. And you know that they mean well, but you're a little put off, a little about it. But at the same time, you're like, oh, but my friend, they do a lot of stuff in the community, though. They make sure folks have access to health care. They make sure folks have jobs. And then at the same time, you're like, but my friend is kind of throws the neighborhood out of whack. I don't know whether they're a friend or a gentrifier or someone who doesn't see color or someone who does. I mean, I think they maybe get a token invite to the cookout. But then there's times where I'm just not sure. And then they mean well, right? They do things like, in response to when there were the killings of Michael Brown and Eric Garner, two unarmed black men, this friend said, we were going to do stuff. They said, we were going to race together, they called it. And they would write, race together, on cups of coffee in order to engage folks in conversations about race. It's kind of like when they tried to say that they didn't see color, too. I think they meant well, but it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And even a program like Race Together that was trying to do something about what happened to Eric Garner and to Michael Brown, it backfired, right? Because people saw it as superficial. A superficial gesture, kind of insensitive, kind of like when folks said you should wear safety pins or something like that. Basically, Starbucks was asking its employees to engage customers on a super sensitive topic about race that could hold up lines while you're getting your coffee, that could lead to arguments, that could get violent. And on top of that, I'm not sure these baristas that they wanted to have talk about race back in 2015 were trained to even do it. And then they had a campaign about it, too, and that campaign featured only white people. And then to add to that, they did a press release beginning with, it began with one voice, and that painted Howard Schultz as a visionary progressive for daring to discuss race as if people of color haven't already been doing that. Yeah, I'm talking about Starbucks. They're that friend that you're kind of cool with, but maybe at times it's felt uneasy. But yet you still hang out with them. I know a lot of y'all still getting those pumpkin spice lattes, at least up until a couple weeks ago. But then all this went down. And maybe we'll have to rethink our friendship with Starbucks.
Where did they get called for? Because there are two black guys sitting here meeting?
Yes, I didn't know
black guys. Well, what did they do? What did they do? Someone told me they did.
They didn't do anything. I saw the entire thing.
They didn't.
The bathroom. And the woman says, "For my customer, they didn't do anything."
And then that happened. And so part of my question is, now what? Everyone's been covering it and commentating about it. I want to know, underdogs, what do you want Starbucks to do now? Because you, I, we've had some type of relationship with them. I mean, heck, I live in Harlem. And even in Harlem now, they're everywhere. What do you want that friend to do who's kind of been trying to do the right thing, but at the same time represents things like gentrification? And in this case now, represents potentially racial profiling and more. What do you want them to do? Well, let me tell you what Starbucks is offering to do. And then you let me know what you want them to do. Or maybe what they're doing is up. Maybe May 29th is now a special day for you too. Because it's supposed to be a special one for Starbucks. Because Starbucks plans to close 8,000 company-owned stores for the afternoon on May 29th to educate employees, about 175,000 employees, about racial bias. Of course, this was prompted by the events that happened the other week when two black men were waiting for their friend in a Starbucks, and the store manager quickly, might I add, very quickly called the police to have them arrested. And the training that is going to happen during May 29th with Starbucks is supposedly put together by a bunch of experts. Former Attorney General Eric Holder, Cheryl Eiffel, the president of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, and Jonathan Greenblatt, the CEO of the Anti-Defamation League. So Starbucks is like, hey, we're going to pull out some of the heavy hitters, some folks who know about this topic, and we're going to talk about it and hopefully make things better. That's one of the things they're going to do. And on top of that, their CEO, Howard Schultz, has also been on record as discussing this topic too. Let's hear what he has to say about this all. And let me know, what do you want Starbucks to do? They've been doing some stuff up until now, but they're kind of that friend where it's like, eh, they say stuff like they don't see color. But they do stuff in the community, right? Jobs, healthcare. But then are they gentrifying too? They tried to race together, but that didn't quite work. Now they're kicking people out of their establishment, black folks, for just doing what everybody else does. You know, Starbucks is supposed to be the meeting place. And now you can't even go to Starbucks and chill out and wait for your friend without getting arrested. What do you want Starbucks to do? Is May 29th enough? Is this apology from Howard Schultz enough?
I think what occurred was reprehensible at every single level. I think I take it very personally, as everyone in our company does, and we're committed to making it right. The announcement we made yesterday about closing our stores, 8,000 stores closed, to do significant training with our people, it's just the beginning of what we will do to transform the way we do business and educate our people on unconscious bias.
But wait, there's more.
And I think the truth of the matter is that every one of us has a different life experience. And that different life experience, unfortunately, produces a level of bias or unconscious bias about what we feel as people. And I think we have an opportunity, with the help of Sherilyn Eiffel from the NAACP and Brian Stevenson and Heather McGee, people who have been in this space for a long time, to help guide us, support
Brian
us.
Brian Stevenson of the Equal Justice Initiative.
Yes. And I want to say something that I think is very important. This is not going to be a one-day event where we're going to do something and leave. We're going to stay with this. It's going to be significant. It's going to endure. And we're going to transform the way we do business.
What do you want Starbucks to do? On May 29th, they're going to shut down their stores for some training. This thing called implicit bias. We'll talk about what that is. Supposedly, the manager who called the police is no longer working at that store location. That feels a little awkward to me, no longer working at the store location, which means I didn't hear the word fired. So I'm a bit confused. And here's how we're talking about the manager.
I would like to know more about the conversation with the manager yesterday. What did you say? What did she say? How is she feeling? Why did she make that call?
I think for her, she is suffering herself in her own way. I think she recognizes that perhaps that call should not have been made. I don't think she intended when she made the call for the police to arrive and arrest the two young men.
What did she think was going to happen?
I think she probably thought that the police were going to talk to the men about what they were doing and why they were there. And I think you have to say, in looking at the tape, that she demonstrated her own level of unconscious bias. And in looking at the tape, you ask yourself whether or not that, in fact, was racial profiling.
What are you going to do with Starbucks, right? They're like that friend or that ally that you got mixed feelings about, right? They're like the friend who says they don't see color. And I know what they mean, but it still rubs you kind of the wrong way, right? They're that friend that does things in the community, healthcare, jobs. But at the same time, it feels like they sometimes throw the community off balance and potentially represent things like gentrification, which can often be a challenge and a struggle for a lot of our underdog communities. Let me know your thoughts. What do you want Starbucks to do? Do they still get to be in your life? Or are you like, no, I'm done. Through with them. Let's go to the phone lines and see what the underdogs think about it. Name and where you're calling from.
Hi. This is Deborah from Manhattan.
Deborah from Manhattan. It's been too long.
Yes, I know.
Talk to me.
I have been to Walgreens. You can sit in there and write the Great American Novel. You don't even have to get up. I've seen people sit, and especially when they have the window seat, they don't get up. And nobody says anything. Nobody's nasty or, you know, but I'm just making the observation. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but it's a policy, at least here in New York. But, you know, there's no problem with that. So why she would call police to ask them what they're doing there, that doesn't even make sense. But I, from another standpoint, I can understand him as a CEO, that he doesn't want to lose any more money than he's already losing now. So, you know, I don't know which way he's going, but in terms of what we should do, I don't think we should do anything. I think we should just sit back and see what he's going to do and stop reacting to it. Because he's the one losing money, not us. You can make some coffee. Stop being lazy. Have your cup of coffee. Go get yourself, you know, a thermos and work with it. There are other places to have coffee. I'm not going to mention the names, but I'm just saying there are other places to have coffee.
You're right. And obviously, we don't know about other people's cities, but
and
I definitely
And if they
know
don't want to act nice, you make your own coffee.
Tell them, Deborah. And I don't know about other cities, but we know here in Manhattan, and for those who are even closer to the station in Harlem, there are plenty of options to get coffee if folks should so choose to.
You know, I think a lot of coffee shops is all about being whatever it is people think they are. You know, I have to go and have my cup of coffee. First of all, I'm not going to pay that much for a cup of coffee in the morning. I'm just not going to do it. It doesn't even taste as good as the one I make. But if that's what you want to do, that's fine. I have no problem with it.
And
so, you know, black people, before they were even allowed to go into a coffee shop, you know, I see people waiting online with their dog to go get their medication. And black people couldn't even go and have a cup of coffee with a hot dog in Woolworth. You understand? Let them wait and just see what they're going to do.
I think that's a good approach. And what I like about it is that it gives them the opportunity to see if they're going to do better. Because
exactly. And then after that, then you can make demands.
Yep.
You know, and not be nasty about it, but I'm talking about on a professional level. make demands. See what these young men are going to do. And see, there's another thing, too, and I'm going to say this about not all black people, but, you know, a lot of times when we get kicked in the ball, they turn around and they say, oh, this is not a black issue. It's a human issue. Okay, fine. Since you feel like that, then I'm gonna wait it out because I'm not getting myself worked up. If you can't see the forest for the trees, you want to be on a human level with people that treat you like animals,
well, no problem.
I don't have a problem with it either.
Then you're not going to like the clip I'm going to play next when one of the gentlemen talks about it's a people thing.
Yeah, I know. But let him go ahead with his people thing.
Well, so because of that, let me catch people up to that. I want to play this clip. Just hold 1 second, because, Deborah, not everybody may have heard the clip that you're referring to.
Mm-hmm.
Hold 1 second. For everybody listening, this is one of the gentlemen who was arrested talking about what happened and his thoughts.
What do you want to see happen here, Dante?
I want to make sure that in this situation doesn't happen again. So what I want is for a young man or young men to not be traumatized by this and instead motivated, inspired.
And what do you want, Rashawn?
So, you know, take this opportunity as a stepping stone, you know, to really stand up and, you know, show your greatness and that you are not judged by the color of your skin as our ancestors were or anyone else. You know, this is something that has been going on for years and everyone's blind to it, but they know what's going on, if you get what I mean. And, you know, just really taking those actions and putting them into place and, you know, help people understand that it's not just a black people thing. This is a people thing. And that's exactly what we want to see out of this, and that's true change. So put action into place and stop using your words.
And I just wanted to play that clip for folks who may not have known what Deborah was referring to. And I think that might have been what you were talking about, Deborah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you don't want to see it, you don't want to see it and represent yourself, then I'm not going to get out there and represent for you. I'm just not going to do that anymore. That's not happening. It's not going to happen. Nobody else does that. Nobody.
You're right.
Nobody.
No.
You understand? There's something really wrong with that.
There is. And
when you say that you don't see color, you know, I know a white teacher who said that. And she said that whenever you hear a person say something like that, a white person, you're dealing with a racist. You know, you can look at a person who has a dress on and say, oh, what a beautiful dress. That goes so wonderful with your tone. That means that you can see the color.
Well,
now, all of a sudden, when we get to skin, then it's something altogether different.
And one of the things I often like to say is, I don't mind you seeing color.
No, I don't either.
My problem is when you hold it against me. You can please see it.
Yeah.
But holding it against me is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But with that, we're going to get into it. I'll talk about what I love you said about demands. And I got a list of some things I want. And I'll be curious to hear about other folks. What are some things they want? Because I want some things. Might as well. If they acting up and they want to hear from us, well, let's talk about some things we want to see happen.
Yes. Great show.
Hey, appreciate you as always, Deborah.
Thank you, Gregory.
All right, now. Bye. And that was Deborah from Manhattan. The question is, Starbucks has been that friend that maybe you didn't grow up with. That friend who has a different culture than you do. Maybe you call them a friend, maybe you call them an ally, but you got mixed feelings about them. On one hand, they say stuff like, I don't see color. And then you kind of know what they mean, but it kind of rubs you the wrong way. And then at the same time, they do things like in the community, they're helping folks get health care, they're helping folks get jobs. And then at the same time, you're like, but they kind of throw the community off balance, and maybe they represent gentrification, and maybe that things aren't evolving in a way that everybody wins. They're a friend that you hang out with sometimes. I seen y'all with those Starbucks cups getting coffee. Don't act like you haven't been drinking pumpkin spice lattes and caramel frappuccinos. Some of y'all might have even gave them the figurative token invite to the cookout. But now what? Deborah says she's going to keep them arm's length away right now. She ain't messing with them. Wants to see what they're going to do. And sometimes we do that with friends, right? They mess up and we don't write them off forever. We just say, I'm a kind of sit back, see what they do, see if they change their ways. Is May 29th enough for you? May 29th, they're going to take a half a day. Do some implicit bias training. We'll talk about what that is. I wanted to dive into it. I wanted to get a better feel. Like, what is that? Implicit, unconscious, conscious, kind of conscious, didn't really know, wasn't sure. Is that what happened? We'll talk about that. But I also want to know, what do you want, right? When people mess up, we get to make requests. We get to make demands. What do you want? I got a list of some things I want to see Starbucks do, especially in my city of brotherly love where I grew up and spent the first 23 years of my life. I know there's some things they might need to do nationally, but I want to go to the city and the area where this happened, and I got a list of things that if those two gentlemen don't want, I got a list of things that I want Starbucks to do. And you heard from Howard Schultz. He had an apology, and he's going to dedicate the afternoon of May 29th to implicit bias training. They're going to try to do better. Is that enough? Is that all we want? Is that all we need? As Jay-Z once said, impossible, difficult takes a day, impossible takes a week. I don't know if an afternoon is enough to conquer this thing which feels impossible at times, and that's getting to equality and racial equality, to be specific. Also this week, there's been a bunch of apologies. Howard Schultz is apologizing. Haven't heard from that manager yet. I'm still a little disturbed that it says she no longer works at that location. I was looking for a stronger statement that said that she was terminated from Starbucks, but, you know, if you know more, especially for my folks in the 215 who listen to the show, holla at a brother. Let me know if there's been any developments on that piece. Also in the news was the police commissioner, Rick Ross, made a statement. And he was a little fugazi with his initial statement. And it rubbed people definitely the wrong way. And then he came up with another statement, another apology later in the week. And for those who may not have heard, this is what the police commissioner with his round two apology. Let me know. You feeling Police Commissioner Rick Ross after this apology? You buying all of it? Kind of? Sort of? Maybe? Let me know.
First of all, good afternoon. I'm here to discuss the unfortunate incident that has been in the news about this great city. An incident that I fully acknowledge that I played a significant role in making worse. For starters, I should have said the officers acted within the scope of the law and not that they didn't do anything wrong. Words are very important. While it is no excuse, my lack of awareness of the Starbucks business model played a role in my messaging. While this is apparently a well-known fact with Starbucks customers, not everyone is aware that people spend long hours in Starbucks and aren't necessarily expected to make a purchase. I've had multiple discussions over the last few days, and it is a well-known fact, but a widespread belief that everyone knows that about Starbucks. I'm here to tell you that I did not, and it is also reasonable to believe that the officers didn't know it either, as I have spoken to a number of people who are not Starbucks customers who are not aware. I was under the belief that people went there and they spent hours and hours, but that the expectation was that they bought something first. I was not unaware. I was not aware of that, and so that is on me. I can appreciate, in light of the Starbucks policy and how well known it is to many, why these two men were appalled when they were asked to leave. For this reason, I apologize to them.
And that was Police Commissioner Rick Ross with a do-over, with a second apology and attempting to give some perspective as to why he saw it one way initially, right after the incident, and now sees it a different way. Seems he now has a better understanding of what happens at Starbucks. You buying it? We gonna give him the benefit of the doubt? He and his officers didn't know much about Starbucks? And even if they did, does that still seem like the next best move is to arrest two men and detain them for up to, I believe, 8-9 hours? let me know. May 29th isn't enough. So speaking of demands, Deborah mentioned this, and I think I want to go there. So what do you want? What do you want Starbucks to do? Right? They have 175,000 employees. I'm going to make the assumption that that one store manager doesn't represent every single Starbucks employee. And that not in every Starbucks, at least I don't think so, that they just arresting black folks as soon as they walk through the door. Although in this case, they did. Some folks say, let's wait and see what they're going to do. May 29th, going to solve everything, right? Probably not. What do you want to see happen next? Are you even going to still mess with Starbucks? Or are they off your friends list? As I talked about earlier, when we say you got some of those friends or allies that you're a little uneasy about, is this the last straw for you? I got some demands, though. Since Starbucks is known as a meeting place, and since it's often known to be in a lot of neighborhoods and some underdog neighborhoods at that, I would love for them to open up their space for free to community organizations, especially those that deal with things that matter to the black community or things that matter to some of the urban communities that they're in, a free space for organizations to have meetings, to have events. That would be one demand. Also, I want to see the invite list for May 29th. If the invite list doesn't include that former manager, if the invite list doesn't include those two police officers, if the invite list doesn't include Police Commissioner Rick Ross, if the invite list doesn't include the mayor of Philadelphia, then I don't think they got the right invite list for their May 29th day of implicit bias training. I also want to see this as more than just a one-off. Because if difficult takes a day and impossible takes a week, then I definitely know May 29th just as a one-off won't be enough. Also, I want to see them develop some type of food and or coffee program with area schools, especially public schools in the Philly area, and maybe branch it out to other cities that Starbucks is in. And if you're saying to me, Gregory, why are you making all these demands? It was just one manager, just doing one thing. Well, there's a lot of making up to do in this country. And I'm tired of always being calm and turning the other cheek and just saying, hey, your apology's enough. Well, sometimes that's not enough. And maybe if the demands are too much or overwhelming, maybe it might lead to some other places to think twice about how they handle these situations when they happen again, because we know they will. Let me know. As Deborah said, we get to make our demands. What are your demands? Let's go to the phone lines. Name and where you're calling from.
Stephanie from Harlem.
Stephanie from Harlem?
Yes.
Oh, talk.
All right. Well, I understand. I think they should fire the woman. But I understand that this particular training that they're going to have is in part or in full going to be participated in by the ADL or some Israeli defending organization, which is ludicrous and a slap in the face because they are the organization that trains a lot of these police departments to respond in protest situations the same way they respond in conflict, not even conflict, in assaults that they launch against the Palestinian. But I do know that Israeli trainers in military offenses are very instrumental with police departments all over the world, and particularly in the U.S. They do training, and they do train vis-a-vis the way that they do it. And otherwise, in other words, they train in a way as to say, this is how we do it. And the way they do it is by total murder. So that's my comment. I don't know that you have the ability to speak to that issue, but we shall see. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Stephanie, for calling in. And I think it might have been your first time, and hopefully it won't be your last time. And Stephanie mentioned she's not sure whether I can speak to that topic specifically or not. I cannot speak specifically to all of the comments she made about what the ADL has been responsible for, some of the tactics that they teach and carry out. But what I can say that I know from researching this story is that the training that is going to happen on May 29th, where Starbucks will close for a half a day, and part of the training will be around implicit bias, and obviously as a result of the profiling and the arrest of the two black men at a Starbucks in Philadelphia. What I do know is that the training that is going to happen at Starbucks on May 29th has been developed with the guidance of three main experts that are mentioned. One of them is from the ADL, which is the Anti-Defamation Group. It's Jonathan Greenblatt, who's the CEO of the Anti-Defamation League. The second of three people who are involved in developing this training is Cheryl Eiffel, the president of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. And lastly, one of the three people who are going to be giving guidance to developing this training at Starbucks will be former Attorney General Eric Holder. So it looks like there is a mix of folks involved, but there is someone involved from the ADL. And I think it is fair to take the stance that our first caller, Deborah, talked about, which is let's see. Maybe wait and see. But at the same time, I also want to make some demands at the same time, too. Thank you, Stephanie, for calling in. And that allowed us to at least share a little bit more details about who is going to be creating this training. And the topic they're going to be talking about is implicit bias. So I just want to share a little bit about what I found out about what implicit bias is. And today we've been talking about Starbucks. They're kind of like that friend, right? That friend, ally, you have some mixed feelings about them over the years. You know, they seem like they mean well, right? They're in the community. They're doing stuff like getting folks access to health care and providing jobs. And then at the same time, they can be a little awkward, maybe, when it comes to race. They tried to do something with the Michael Brown and Eric Garner situation called a campaign Race Together, where they were going to have their baristas who were not trained in race relations to have conversations about race. And that didn't go too well. Kind of rubbed people the wrong way. It's kind of like when you have one of those friends that says to you they don't see color. I know what they mean, but it doesn't land the right way. I'm one of those people. I don't mind you seeing color. I just mind when you hold it against me. And Starbucks has been also an organization where it's kind of cool there in the community, and at the same time, maybe it's not. They often represent gentrification going on, which we know doesn't always seem to have a win-win for those who are part of the existing community and then for those who become part of the new community. And so the question I've been asking, what's up with you and your, you know, friend that you got mixed feelings with? You still going to mess with Starbucks, or are you like, nah, I'm good? You're unfriending them. Is May 29th enough for you, where they are going to have a day of implicit bias training? Not even a day. I think it's an afternoon. Going to shut down 8,000 of their own stores and about 175,000 employees. And they're going to do something. So they're taking a step, right? It's a step in the right direction. You good with that, or do you want more? I got a list of demands. What are your list of demands? It seems that the two gentlemen who were involved in this, they have their point of view on things. Police commissioner has his point of view. Howard Schultz has his. What's yours? We'd love to hear whether or not you are still going to be, quote unquote, friends with Starbucks. And is May 29th enough for you? It's not enough for me. I got a list of demands. But they keep saying this word, implicit bias. Implicit. I was wondering, so I wanted to kind of figure that out. And I thought appropriate for us to dig into it just a little bit. What is implicit bias? It's the automatic association people make between groups of people and stereotypes about these groups. The bias can be subconsciously influenced. The bias can subconsciously influence people. They have given rise to a phenomenon known as racism without racists. That don't sound too good. There's training that focuses on reducing this phenomenon. Research, though, has shown that bias associations can be gradually unlearned and replaced with unbiased ones. And there's been a push to have police departments take some type of implicit bias training. It's reported that, according to The Atlantic, that implicit bias training is offered in at least 4 states for state police and their training academics. There are some local departments in over a dozen states that offer implicit bias training too. And despite the idea becoming more popular, it is unclear if the classes actually work. And isn't that disheartening that we know that there's this challenge of bias and it's still rather unclear whether it can even for sure be trained to be unlearned. And at the same time, despite this idea of implicit bias training becoming more popular to make sure police get trained in it, but there aren't really that many specific guidelines. Like, what should the course include? How should they be taught? How can it be measured as effects? So it's like we kind of know there's a problem. We're kind of working on it, and we're kind of not. And why is this important? Well, it's especially important if you're a Black American. Because a third more where, as a Black American, I would, or and if you listening happen to be a Black American, you would be a third more likely to be stopped by police, up to a third more likely to be ticketed during a stop, 3 times more likely to be searched, 3 times more likely to be subject to use of force, and unarmed Black people are 3.5 times more likely to be shot by police than unarmed whites. In a study that was done, where officers were shown white and Black subjects with something in their hands and then had to decide whether to shoot or not, officers were quicker to decide to shoot the armed Black subjects than the white one. They took longer to spare unarmed Blacks, and there was virtually no racial discrepancies in the officers' mistaken shots. Later, it was shown that the bias seemed to creep in when the officers were under mental stress. It's not easy when your skin color triggers mental stress for folks. And that's just a little bit about implicit bias. I wanted to take a moment to at least share what I've heard about it, what some people are saying about it. Some people think it's a good thing. And then you even have people like this gentleman, Ben Shapiro, saying that maybe it's not something that we should be worried about at all.
Implicit bias, unconscious bias, and biased behavior has yet to be proven at any level that is even remotely necessary to be used in, for example, a courtroom, which is why it's never been used in a courtroom. It is also true that there is no way, there really isn't, there's been no proven way to alleviate what they call unconscious bias, which means that we're ghost hunting.
Maybe May 29th isn't going to be enough. Let me know. Implicit bias coming to 175,000 employees of Starbucks near you. What do you want? I haven't been to a Starbucks since this whole thing unfolded. And I am in the Deborah camp where I will not be going back at least until after May 29th and see what happens between now and then. And I got some demands of Starbucks, especially in the Philly area. I want them to open up their stores for meeting spaces, for community groups, especially those that deal with race, especially with those that deal with policing. You know, Starbucks is selling coffee, but they're also in the real estate. They got some spaces. Open them up for free. I got another request. The invite list, it's short a few people. I know it's going to include 175,000 of their employees, but if it doesn't have that former manager, then the list is incomplete. If it doesn't have Police Commissioner Rick Ross of Philadelphia, the list is incomplete. If it doesn't have the 2 police officers that arrested those 2 Black men, the list is incomplete. If it doesn't have the mayor of Philadelphia, the list is incomplete. Also, half a day This type of training should be annual. And then also, I want Starbucks to initiate some type of food and coffee programs with area community centers and or public schools. And have it be ongoing. That's my list. What's on your list? Because when things don't go well or we're frustrated, acknowledging and listening to folks' apologies is one thing. But then we also get to make requests about what would work going forward. That's my list. What's your list? We're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, it's time to talk villains or vilified. Who saw Black Panther? If you haven't seen it yet, come on now. It's been out for a minute. I was a little late to go see it, I will admit. But you should have seen it by now. So you can't say I'm spoiling anything. There's no spoiler alerts. It's been out for months. We're going to talk about it. So all you Black Panther fans, get ready. We're going to talk about villains or vilified. And to end the show, we're going to talk about It's Never Too Late. And there's a Black Panther tie-in to a story about it never being too late. More of the Gregory Neesmith Show after this break. Welcome back to the Gregory Neesmith Show, a special delivery of underdog stuff. It's also a special mix of politics, culture, and personal development stuff, too. Today's theme, black coffee, villains are vilified, and it's never too late. That's what we talk about today. And I said it would all make sense by the time we're done. So let's get into villains are vilified. Who saw Black Panther? I will admit, I was a little late to the party. As some of you know, I'm not a big movie goer. In the past 2 years, I've only gone to the theater to see two movies. That's it. Just two. In 2017, I saw Get Out in the theater. And in 2018, so far, the only movie I've seen in the theater is Black Panther. And full disclosure, I only recently saw it. It took me a little while, but I got there because the movie's on my thing. But I was like, I got to go see it. Shout out to Naveen for going to see it with me. And it was her fourth time seeing it. So shout out to her supporting Black Panther. I'm going to have to go see it again, make sure I give it some additional support. And for all of you who have seen it, you're not alone. It has made $1 billion globally already and still counting. Record-breaking so far. It was the top February domestic debut ever, bringing in $202 million in its first 3 days and $242 million in its first 4 days debuting in February. A record! And its 3-day start is number 5 all time of all domestic launched movies. It also is number 1 for the biggest Monday ever. It's also number 1 for a non-holiday third weekend of box office sales. Basically, it's a record-breaking movie, right? The list goes on of all the records it's broken. And it's a movie that was celebrated, right? A lot of just beautiful black folks on the screen doing stuff in Wakanda and in the motherland. Now, you know, it still felt a little odd to me that during Black History Month, the most celebrated thing going on felt like it was a movie, which is fiction. And I know art imitates life and life imitates art. And, you know, Black Wakanda's cool. I also think Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma is cool, too. And that's a place that I dream of making a comeback. Wakanda never existed, but Black Wall Street did. But I digress. I'm still a big fan of Black Panther, and I loved it and what it represented. Because as we know, there's things called in arts and entertainment and literature called the mirror versus the window. And oftentimes, as underdogs, especially for some of my people out there, we grew up, especially in the mainstream, consuming a lot of things that are from the window's perspective. They help us see out beyond our world. And while that is of value, because as you know, it's not about either or, I'm a believer in both. So the window is a great thing to get to see things that maybe you or I didn't see growing up. Exposure is a big deal. It's one of the unwritten rules of underdog stuff, right? To go from underdogs to champs is to get exposed to things because we do better when we know better. All the skills are there. Sometimes it's just access that's missing. And at the same time, the mirror is important too. It's a big deal to go read a book or to go see a play or to go see a movie, and it's a mirror. You look and you see people that look like you, that got swag like you, that talk like you, that move like you. And that is a big deal too. And so what I appreciate about Black Panther is that it wasn't about the window. For me, it was actually, in this case, a mirror, which is cool. And I know a lot of you felt the same way. And on top of that, the reality is there's a lot of folks that got employed because of it. Black director, writers, actors. So it's a big deal, not just in fiction, but also in reality. And like most good movies, there's some complexity to it, right? Good writing leads to good characters, which leads to good debate. And so I wrote a post earlier this week about a character that caught my attention in the movie. And his name was Eric Killmonger. And I wrote a simple post. The post was literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 words. And the post said this. No pictures, no links, no nothing. Just 8 words. It said, Eric Killmonger was not a villain. He was fill in the blank. That's it. That's all I wrote. I just wrote, Eric Killmonger was not a villain. He was fill in the blank. And it was interesting to see the responses. One person, Mr. Paulson, wrote, Eric Killmonger was like Magneto. Glenn wrote, Eric Killmonger was someone with a valid point, but ruined it because he was also a complete sociopath. JP writes, Eric was a tyrannical dictator, and his villainy, I can't even say that word. He became a villain specifically. It occurred when he ordered the destruction of the remaining heart-shaped flowers, herbs, so that no one but he could ever have the powers. Ms. Hopkins writes, Eric was a young man without proper positive guidance. Orion said he was an anti-hero. I had to Google that because I wasn't quite sure what that meant. But an anti-hero is a central character in a story or film or drama who lacks conventional heroic attributes. Paul said Eric was right, but he was misguided in how to prove it. JP says Killmonger was the physical embodiment of a perspective of a people marginalized by the greater population. And he talks about this fact that the greater population was physical embodiment of a perspective marginalized by the greater population as it inspires dialogue, strategy, and correction through means often visualized as revolutionary when it really should be considered as empowerment for the oft-disenfranchised. Bernice says Eric was a victim of post-traumatic syndrome. He wanted to see his father. Hey, say it again, Bernice. There are some things that happened to us as kids that we still haven't recovered from. He's not the only one. Tavion says he was a product of his environment. Someone else said he was Malcolm X. Keon says he was vilified. Kevin says he was a hero. And what I said to folks is that I, first of all, thank people for sharing. And also let folks know that I asked the question because I'm still processing my answer to the question too. And I wanted to see what you thought. So far, I think Eric was angry. I think he was frustrated. I think he was smart, militant, a revolutionary, an anti-hero. I think he was seeking revenge. I think he was a tyrannical dictator. I think he was a villain in the end. But sometimes art imitates life. So I know the question that I asked about Eric has real implications, right? it has real implications for how we see people in the real world who might have some of Eric's story in their life. I'm starting to think that calling him only a villain is an incomplete answer and jumps to the ending without telling the entire story. That's where I'm at right now. It's interesting to see so many perspectives just from one character. But for me, he isn't just a villain. What are your thoughts? Did you see Black Panther? First of all, I'll give you a lot of guts if you would actually call up right now and tell me that you didn't see Black Panther, but it's all right. I didn't see it till late, so I can't be too mad at you. But if you saw Black Panther, and you know, we don't just commentate, we get personal about things going on in society and culture. What grabbed your attention about this character? Was he a villain, or was he more than that? Is it possible that there's underdogs out there who have a complicated path and story, and that it's not just one thing or the other? And I'm not the only one talking about this. There's been some other people talking about whether he was a villain or not. And it goes a little something like this.
Eric Killmonger is absolutely a villain because, for sure, he has killed incessantly. All he knows is violence. All he knows is war. All he knows is destruction. And in everything that we see him do, he's in pursuit of those things. Those are very easily, just to open it up, those are villainous acts. To want to destroy and to want to take away and remove, that is in no way heroic or even neutral.
I mean, that's one point of view. And then there's some folks saying this.
My opening case for Eric Stevens, I would not call him Killmonger because he was branded Killmonger by the CIA, is that he is of royal bloodline. He was ripped away from his family. His father was murdered. His father died in his arms. He was raised in the mean streets of Oakland. He made it out of that. He got to MIT. He got himself a degree. He graduated MIT at 19, went on to become a Navy SEAL, a decorated Navy SEAL, went on to work for the CIA. All of the killing that he did was sanctioned and for his country and was all at the orders of someone else. It's not like he's just a serial killer, a mass murderer. When he returned to Wakanda, he was well within his rights to challenge for the throne. And he did challenge for the throne, and he won the throne, rightfully. And what is Eric's biggest drawback? That he wants to help his homies, that he wants to help the world, that he wants to stop seeing his people defeated? If that's a villain, then call me the bad guy.
Villain or vilified. Killmonger said his purpose was to liberate black people all over the world. This has people questioning if he was a bad guy to begin with. So I want to know, because sometimes underdogs, we get vilified. We get called the villain. Remember Malcolm X? Remember Huey Newton of the Black Panthers, ironically enough? I sure as heck remember times of them being considered the villain and being vilified. Remember Martin Luther King? People forget, in the 60s, two-thirds of Americans hated Martin Luther King. Considered him a villain. He was vilified. I bring this up because I know we're talking about a movie, but sometimes art imitates life. Life imitates art. And sometimes how we see stuff going on in the movies is actually also how we see stuff going on in the real world. So I bring up Eric Killmonger, not because of Eric Killmonger, but because parts of his story represent stories of real people in real life. And I'm tired of folks sometimes just taking the extreme of this or that and not looking at the total story. With that, let's go to the phone lines. I think it's Deborah from Manhattan.
Hi, Ugly.
Yes, talk to me.
I don't think he was made in America. So when people want to start talking and throwing words around, he was made in America. But with all of that said, there was a balance. And so if you want to look at him good versus bad, fine. But like you said, the this young other person said he was a royal blood, and he basically, he was as smart and he was as brilliant, but he was dirty. He was dirty, and he had been so, I mean, I can't even imagine, you know, not knowing, and then having to deal. Look at him versus the brother from Africa. They had no reason to be angry. They had what they were supposed to have. He didn't have what he was supposed to have. Look at how disrespectful he was to women.
Very disrespectful to women. And
he was very disrespectful. I mean, he grabbed this woman by the throat. He was willing to take the plant, that purple plant, and get rid of it. Had that sister not saved it, you know, God knows what would have happened. He didn't care. He went there to destroy. So there was someone who said, well, hey, if it was me, I would have done the same thing. Or maybe you would have if you had the experience that he had. But I tell you one thing, this dude could read and write. And a whole lot of people out here who have problems, they need to learn that Eric went and got himself an education.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just sorry that it had to end the way it did. But there's one thing that Eric would not have done that the brother who did, I would not have gone to the UN and shared with anybody. But I said, well, it makes it very, very interesting because for another episode or another comic strip, you know, the CIA and the white guy, that was another thing. They were very, do you notice how nice they were because of the fact that he had saved that young lady's life?
Yep.
Killmonger would not have thought like that.
No. No, and
you see what I'm saying?
No.
So I'm like, okay.
And you bring up another point, which I didn't even plan to go there, but this idea of should you talk about going to the UN, should they have just kept like Wakanda to themselves?
Exactly.
And that's a debate that happens in the world today, right? There's places like America where we're supposedly built on this idea of like, hey, everybody can come in.
Yeah.
And then there's countries like in Europe, I want to say some of the Nordic countries like Sweden or come to mind where they're like, no, we don't really have to let people in. We're just going to stay happy and like be to ourselves.
Exactly.
And so that's
that whole woman thing. And I'll tell you something else that I always admired. When they had the fight in the beginning, it was even.
Yes.
And all of them had people to back them up in the event that something went wrong. When Killmonger fought, he fought dirty. He fought just like they teach him here in America. Hmm.
Yeah, man. So many. What do they say that saying? It's art imitating life.
Yes.
Because it's written by people.
Yes. And but I thought that it was a wonderful piece, and I must go see it again.
Yes.
And if they have dolls, and if they're created by the right people, and they look like me, then I might purchase a few. If it's for someone else or by someone else, I'm not going to buy it.
Hey, I'm not mad at you. And the one thing I didn't mention about some of the records they've been breaking records on merchandise, too, because a lot of folks feel a certain kinship or a certain energy of wanting to also wear some of the things from Black Panther, because obviously they feel like it represents some of their spirit and some of their soul.
Well, you have a great day.
All right, you too, Deborah. Appreciate you.
Bye.
Bye now. And that was Deborah from Manhattan weighing in on Eric Killmonger and Black Panther. And like we've been discussing, was he a villain or was he vilified? Here's what some other people have been saying.
Eric Killmonger is absolutely a villain because, for sure, he has killed incessantly. All he knows is violence. All he knows is war. All he knows is destruction. And in everything that we see him do, he's in pursuit of those things. Those are very easily, just to open it up, those are villainous acts to want to destroy and to want to take away and remove. That is in no way heroic or even neutral.
And then there's some people saying this.
Excuse me, my opening case for Eric Stevens, I would not call him Killmonger because he was branded Killmonger by the CIA. is that he is of royal bloodline. He was ripped away from his family. His father was murdered. His father died in his arms. He was raised in the mean streets of Oakland. He made it out of that. He got to MIT. He got himself a degree. He graduated MIT at 19, went on to become a Navy SEAL, a decorated Navy SEAL, went on to work for the CIA. All of the killing that he did was sanctioned and for his country and was all at the orders of someone else. It's not like he's just a serial killer, a mass murderer. When he returned to Wakanda, he was well within his rights to challenge for the throne. And he did challenge for the throne, and he won the throne, rightfully. And what is Eric's biggest drawback? That he wants to help his homies, that he wants to help the world, that he wants to stop seeing his people defeated? If that's a villain, then call me the bad guy.
And that's what some folks are saying. Like I said, was Eric Killmonger a villain, or was he vilified? I'm still processing my own answer to it, but I did want to see what you thought about it. Like I said, so far I do think Eric was angry. He was frustrated. He was smart. He was militant. He was revolutionary. He was an anti-hero. He was seeking revenge. He was also a tyrannical dictator and a villain in the end. But sometimes art imitates life. So I know this question can have real implications on how I and we see people in the real world. I'm starting to think that calling him only a villain is an incomplete answer and jumps to the ending without telling the entire story. That's where I'm at right now. Where are you at? Always interesting to see that one character can lead to so many perspectives. It's time to talk about It's Never Too Late. And there's a Black Panther twist to an example of that. It isn't. It's never too late. For real. We got a good example. And it has to do with Black Panther. A few months ago, wrote an article called Start Whenever, But Definitely Keep Going. Start Whenever, But Definitely Keep Going. And what I mean by start whenever is that whenever you start, you start. But oftentimes the challenging part is not getting started, but it's to keep going. But I don't want to say that to step over the fact that sometimes it can feel like it's been too late. When I was around 10 or 11 years old, I had the childhood dream of wanting to have my own talk show on radio or TV. And high school would come, didn't do anything about it. College would come, I didn't volunteer or try out for the college radio station. My work years in my 20s and 30s would come. I never attempted to do it then either. And then finally, about 3 years ago, I finally got the guts to lean in and try to be a talk radio host. And it felt a little awkward, right? 30 years had passed. I had never trained at it. Never did it, never been on a radio, never had a mic in my face ever before in my life. But 3 years ago, I said, you know what? I'm finally going to give it a try. But I did at one point think it was too late. And it got me to looking up folks about when they started things. And we know some of the cool stories, like Mark Zuckerberg, right? He was in his teens. He was 19 when he started Facebook. That's the cool stuff, right? Oh, yeah, when you're young, you take risks, try stuff. Maybe you have a Facebook. You'd be like Mark Zuckerberg. Or there's folks in their 20s who do stuff like Steve Jobs launches Apple in his 20s. And that still feels good. Doesn't feel like it's too late. When you're in your 20s, you're exploring, you're trying things out. You may not even have a family yet. You feel like a big risk taker. And then you get into your 30s and maybe you're like Oprah, where you start Harpo. And right, 30s feels like that turning point. Like maybe it's like do or die. I got to do it now or it's never going to get done. Because life happens after that. You got maybe kids to take care of. You maybe have aging parents to take care of. You got a mortgage. You got responsibilities, as they say. So it may feel like it's too late. But then you got folks like Jeffrey Brotman, who started Costco in his 40s. And then you got people like, who's ever had some Campbell soup when they're not feeling well? Well, Joseph Campbell didn't start that thing till he was in his 50s. Some examples of it may feel like it's too late, but nah, it's not too late. And then you have people who do stuff in their 80s, like 80 something years old. You know why? Because it's never too late. Have you heard this story about this woman who embodies it's never too late, and it has something to do with the Black Panther?
How'd you get in Black Panther?
My agent, Cindy Butler from I Submit Talent, sent me this thing for an audition. And I said, there is no way I'm going to be in no comic strip at my age. And she was very persistent. I really have to give her credit because she said, Miss Dorothy, you can do this. I said, no, I can't. But my grandson came over, Niles Wardell. He said, Grandma, you always talk about stepping out on nothing. Let your faith take you there. He said, now, how come you don't do it yourself? I said, what do you mean? He said, either you're going to step out there or you're going to shut up. I went to the computer, and every day I practiced Mandela.
And in case you didn't know who that was talking, that's Dorothy Steele. And she began her acting career when she was, wait for it, 88 years old. At the age of 92, she landed a dream role of one of the tribal elders of Wakanda. She is the merchant tribal elder who advises the king of Wakanda. She got the role after she sent her audition tapes into Marvel. She said that where she was one of the oldest on the set, she quickly became the grandmother figure to everyone. The fact she was able to see a peak in her career this late in her life is extraordinary. According to a Time analysis, women usually see a peak in their acting careers around the age of 30, and men usually peak around the age of 46. She's peaking in her late 80s and early 90s. Shout out to Dorothy, who is still a reminder that even when we get tired out here and frustrated, so much so that we don't even feel like we can go get a cup of coffee anymore without there being problems. Or when there's times where we think we're doing the right thing, but it's not even sure whether we're the villain or being vilified. There's still some examples out there and some bright spots of folks that no matter what they've been through, even if it's 80 something years of life, that they still have a spirit of curiosity, a spirit of creativity, a spirit of, you know, maybe it's not too late. Maybe things can be different. And maybe even if things can't be totally different for the rest of the world, maybe at least in my world, for myself and my family members who are watching and learning from me, that I can still walk the walk and talk the talk and still go out and do things because it's never, ever too late. That's what Dorothy said. Don't talk about it anymore. Just step out there. Or as Dorothy would say, or shut up. I'm mad at Dorothy. An inspiration, and awesome to see one of our elders out there going from underdog to champ, even in her late 80s and early 90s. And shout out to all the underdogs that have come along on the journey today. Want to shout out the folks who've been following along on the Facebook Live. Shout out to Dora, who shouts out with a smiley face, smiling right back at you. Shout out to Daryl, who says, what's up? Shout out to Daryl, the 215 and the 212. One of my childhood friends, grateful that he checks in when he gets a chance to. And shout out to Naveen, who says, in reference to our discussion about villains of vilified, talking about Eric Killmonger, and my lady, who I saw Black Panther with, says, Killmonger's methods were misguided by his trauma. But he was a wake-up call. His struggle ultimately helped change Wakanda for the better and ended Wakanda's isolationism. Shout out to Naveen, providing some perspective that just putting Killmonger into one box with one word called villain leaves out some of the complexities of his character and the impact that he had on Wakanda and the world. And while we're talking about art, at the same time, there's people who have some of those same stories that we end up talking about in life. And I think as underdogs, it is always helpful for us to give more texture and talk about the entire story instead of just putting people into one box or another. Shout out to Naveen. Shout out to Daryl. Shout out to Dora on the Facebook Live. Shout out to Stephanie and Deborah for doing it the old school way, calling in the show. Appreciate you. Thank you to all the underdogs who came along on the journey today. And I want to get out of here with also making sure I say thank you to the team. Megan, my producer, and Kayla, my editor. They make sure that I'm ready to go for the show and then also make sure that the podcast looks and sounds good. Appreciate you. And thank you to everyone who also downloads the podcast. Always appreciate it. It's time for me to end the show. Today's show was Black Coffee, Villain or Vilified, or It's Never Too Late. And if you listen to the show before, you know how I'm going to end it. I'm going to end it with my favorite quote. And that is, underdogs, there's nobody, and I mean nobody, underdogs, there's nobody that can do it like you do it. Nobody.